It's a Father's Day message. It's a Mother's Day message, because I know so many of your mothers, or you have mothers you miss. And it's a message as a mentor. Some people can't be fathers or mothers, but they can be a mentor. So I'll start off Exodus 20, verse 12. Honor your father and mother so that you may live long in the land of the Lord. And as I speak here, you know, think back too of people, of your mother, your dad, your teachers, people you work with that have been an influence in your life. And I'm going to give it's going to be a short shout out to, first of all, thank you, Daddy. You and Mama, y'all had me. They were young when they had me, younger than most people would like. I don't know if they were completely ready to be parents, if that was, they wanted to be parents at that time. Probably wanted to wait 2 or 3 years, but I came along, and boys, I'm grateful for that. So just tell a few stories about a love of a father, of a mother, of a great-grandmother, of a coach. My dad, as you know, is a hyperactive man. Now, he always has a mission, and that's one thing I try to keep in my heart and soul. But this is kind of the way he was. When I went away to Rice University on a football scholarship, 18 years old, he followed me for breakfast in San Angelo. That was 87 miles south with my grandparents. Followed me to Austin, all the way to Austin, make sure I'd be okay. And then he turned around and went back to Big Spring, and I drove the last 160 miles, and I was scared to death. But I was so thankful that he drove that far, and I really wanted him to drive further. But it was like the macho thing to walk in there by yourself, you know, to your new school. So, and then every year he would follow me part of the way. And this is a Del Norte Pie story. One year he followed me. We had breakfast in San Angelo. So I'm going to follow you to Austin. Then we go down. I pull off the side of the road and around Smithville, Texas, and here he pulls up. I pull up to a red light in LaGrange, Texas, and here he is. 25 miles later, I get on Interstate 10. I'm going to get on Interstate 10 in Columbus, Texas, 70 miles from Houston, and he's waving at me, still waving at me. And so we went through, we had our first team meeting in football, met all the newcomers, and I called my mother and said, Daddy followed me all the way to Columbus. And she said, well, he's laying back there in bed, he's pretty tired. Yeah, he'd only driven 760 miles to see his baby 21-year-old boy off one more time. Then you think about other things. I know you had parents. I just want to, this is kind of a cleansing for me. My mother, every year we'd go to college, and she would have a big box, and she'd sit back there and cry and put everything you'd need in your dorm room, in your bathroom, and it was supposed to last the whole semester. Well, my roommate the first year was Frank Rocco Bergio, big defensive end from Brooklyn, New York, who had to fly down without his family, and he was homesick, but so we'd share that. Care packages like that. I had a great-grandmother, my dad's maternal grandmother, Mamaw Ballard, would every semester she would send, and she had to be over 90, and she lived in a nursing home retirement center, would send these homemade oatmeal cookies with pecans, my favorite. She'd make them and send them. So still remember that. My mother's parents were just awesome. We're like my best friends. And like I said, I was born when my mother and dad were 20 and 21. And my grandmother, Lacey Howerton, my grandmother, Dorothy Howerton, my grandmother's dad was a Disciple of Christ minister and migrated from Pennsylvania, Ohio, Indiana, Chicago, Oklahoma City, Tulsa, and ended up in Abilene, thank goodness, and she met my grandfather. So Disciple of Christ goes way back. And ironically, but they were so strong, giving me they were like friends, and they were also spiritual leaders to me, at least, in my walk that I still carry with them today. I used to take walks with my grandfather. He'd take us for walks in the evening, and gosh, I miss those walks. He was 6'4", 6'5", and someday I'll walk again with granddad. I had and I hope this doesn't bore you, but I just think so many people can be fathers, mentors, mothers in your life. Had my dad's mother, Mom, we called her. She had a husband who was 12 years younger. She was 40, he was 28. I might be off a year, but I know they were 12 years age difference. So you think about it, a 28-year-old man marries a 40-year-old woman that has two children, my dad's two youngest siblings, and helped raise them and put a roof over their head, and always treated, you know, Mark and Dell and me just with as much love as you could have. And thank you, Johnny Sullins. Lindy Hardy and his wife, Ginevra, called me their Florida son. When I was 28, I moved to Pompano Beach, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, my territory, and I was selling oil and gas to distributors. I sold in Miami, Fort Lauderdale, West Palm Beach, the Florida Keys. I was frightened, the first time out of Texas, and really in the industry I didn't know. And one of my customers and his wife took me in, not only taught me he was the second largest lubricant selling oil, the second largest diesel sales person, had his plant there in Pompano Beach. They took me in, gave me a key to their house, would take me to the First Baptist Church of Pompano Beach, had me over a lot, and they called me their son, their Texas son. They were so proud of that. And thank you to Lindy and Ginevra Hardy. And then the guy that, you know, I've been a coach. I started coaching age 33. My dad was a coach till he was 2 weeks shy of his 84th birthday. But I had a coach that was really instrumental named Charlie Bailey. And he coached me at Rice for 2 years as a defensive coordinator. But he had such an impact on me, was such a mentor to me and a lot of my teammates. We still love him. And then he left Rice. We were so sad, but he went to Pastor Tanya's Kentucky Wildcats. But we stayed in touch. He's one of those guys, people you'd stay in touch. And then he hired me at UTEP. And I was coaching high school football. He hired me at UTEP, and I stayed 27 years. But he grew up in West Virginia with an outhouse where you had to go outside. I mean, back in poverty of West Virginia. But he taught me more, not only about how to be a football coach, how to be an administrator, but more importantly, he taught me how to treat young men and that you can still be tough, but you can be loving and you can make them. You can help them not only be good football players, most importantly, good citizens when they get out of school. Coach Bailey was really indirectly so strong in that. Countless teachers. I had a teacher, I have to throw this out. Do any of you remember Bobby Milburn? You used to go to church here? Yeah. Well, Bobby Milburn was my second grade teacher, and we reconnected like 50 years later at the passing of the peace. Here, she told me your name. I went, did you ever teach in Big Spring, Texas? She said, yeah, just 1 year. We moved around West Texas. I said, where'd you teach? She said, Marcy Elementary. And I went, that's my second grade teacher, one of my favorite teachers ever, at the passing of the peace right here. Rather than just saying hi to the people right next to you, might have never known that. But thank you, Bobby. Just all these people. I know you all had. Think back today about men and women in your life, or that have helped you like that. And why did all these men and women and teachers and coaches? Why did they help me? Because they love people. And they care. They have the Holy Spirit in their soul. I'm going to tell a story before I get to the next part. But it's about the brilliance of my mother, the brilliance of a lady, of a mother. And a coach for listening and just the way life works. So I was a sophomore in high school, and we were practicing on Labor Day, which we always, Mark and Dell and I, we always went out to the country club. My dad played golf, Big Spring Country Club. It's not like it's a lavish country club, but went out there, and they had hamburgers. And, you know, you're a sophomore in high school, so you're starting to notice the girls, too, and in the swimsuits. So that's what I wanted to do that afternoon. But I'd made the varsity. I was a sophomore, one of three sophomores on the varsity. We all practiced, JV varsity. We practiced that Labor Day morning. And then the head coach, who I thought was a mean hillbilly, He said, all you JV guys be back tomorrow. And varsity guys, we got Lubbock Monterey Friday night. We'll practice again at 5 o'clock. Tell your parents we'll be through by 8. And I went home, and by golly, I wasn't gonna go back. I was going to quit. It was hot. I was the youngest guy on the team. I just didn't like it. And I told my mother that, went in on her bed, acted like I was crying. And about 1 o'clock, she got me. She said, come on, let's go. She had her swimsuit on. We went out and got in the car. I thought, yeah, I'm going to get to go eat some hamburgers and look at girls. And we started driving. Well, we didn't go right at the main drag in Big Spring. We went left. Right went to at Highway 87 South. Left. Then we went right. Then we went left, and we pulled up right by First Christian Church of Big Spring. And I thought, well, we're not going to church. Took a right, and we went. And this went up right up to the high school. And here's the coach. It's 1:15 in the afternoon. He's sitting up there. It's probably 100 degrees, and there's some humidity. And he's in one of those old metal rickety chairs sitting by himself. And my mother pulled up, and she was one of the best loving, kind people ever, but she could be stern. And she said, it's hot. It's uncomfortable for you. You're the youngest one on the team. But you enjoy sports. You enjoy football. And you're not going to quit. I'm not going to let you quit, because there are going to be times in life that you have to work through things. So I want you to get out and go meet your coach. He might not be such a bad guy after all. And so I went up, and I still, to this day, Coach Help passed away about 7-8 years ago, my mother 3 years ago. I never asked him how they coordinated. Did they coordinate that, or was it just happenstance? They had to coordinate it. But I got out, and she said, that your coach, he might not be a bad guy. Get out there and get to know him. And then as I got out, she goes, I'll save you a hamburger. Okay. So I go, I walked up, and here he is. He said, well, Nate Poss, what are you doing? I said, well, I just came up to visit, Coach. He said, well, let me get you a chair. And he sat down. The water, we had one of those old hoses. We drank water out of the hose and talked until everybody started coming in for practice. And, you know, he and I became the best of friends through life. Whenever I had a life decision, I would call this old mean hillbilly, who was not, he was highly intelligent. He just talked like I did, country, or maybe even a little more, and became one of my best friends for life. But that never would have happened if my mother hadn't been a mother and a mentor and a parent and said, get out and work through this. So kudos to them. The next part is I morph into the key that we all have. The key is a church service on Father's Day Sunday in 1989. Just resonates in my soul. 1989, I was at a suburban church in right outside of Washington, D.C. It was either Reston or Great Falls or Vienna, Virginia, right in that area. And I went to was staying with a friend, Ken Coffey, a family friend. My brother Dale was in Kenneth's wedding, and Dale was in Kenneth's wedding. Kenneth got drafted by the Washington Redskins and played in 2 Super Bowls. And so I went to church with their family. And I don't know, it was a couple hundred people. But it was a lot of Washington Redskins and a lot of families, but it was all black. I mean, that's fine. I mean, because we grew up, and I liked all kinds of churches. We all worship our Lord and Savior. And went in with Kenneth's family, and they didn't pass the peace like we do. They just said, you know, everybody greet at a certain spot. The man sitting next to me, named Art, tall, good-looking, lean, good-looking man. And I'm Nathan. I'm Art. Yeah, okay. Well, he took notes. I noticed he had notes from the program, and he took notes the whole time. And we get through, and I ask him, why do you take notes? And he said, because when my grandmother raised me, she made me take notes, and then we would go home and we would discuss what the preacher had to say. So out of respect for my grandmother, I always take notes. I started taking notes. I've got notes from all over. Anyway, I take that and everything. I go back through it. Someday I think I'm going to publish them, put a book together and say, you know, notes from different preachers and different churches all over the country. Might be interesting, if anything else. But Art Monk, turns out, we go to eat lunch. Art Monk was a perennial all-pro wide receiver for the Redskins in their glory days back with the coach Joe Gibbs. And now he's in the NFL Hall of Fame. But at the passing of the peace, we talked, and he gave me, why do we take notes? But moving on as far as that, why that, another reason that that service resonated with me is because the title of the sermon, which goes into this too, the pastor said the title was "The Problem of Fathering in the Black Community." And he was just, and of course, he was kind of preaching to the choir, to that group, because they all had, most all of them had their families, but he encouraged all the black men to be better fathers and to encourage other black men to be better fathers out in the community. So sadly, as I think about what I've seen in our society, it's not just the black community now. It's in this great country we still live in. I still think it's a great country we live in, but it's in all races and all ethnicities, there's more and more children, young people without mothers and fathers. You know, I was at UTEP Athletics the last 27 years until this past year, and I came to Ruidoso Middle School for 8 months, and that was a blessing to me looking back. And now I'm trying to get more kids to come out and play football and be successful in Capitan. And I've seen so many kids that are raised by a grandmother here, a grandfather, an aunt, a foster family, you know, or they're in a, like in El Paso, there was a child crisis center, and here, other places, and I thought, well, maybe it's Lincoln County. I was talking to Mark McDonald, a writer in Midland, Texas, Thursday. He helped my dad write his book, and he said, it's not just El Paso, it's not just Lincoln County. 65% of youth in America, children, youth in America, aren't living with two parents. They're living with a mother or a dad or a grandmother or an aunt or a foster family. And it's sad. So you say, well, why am I talking about this? I just say we all of us can have a way we can serve. Serve as a father, as a mother, as a mentor, as a friend in the society we live in. You know, I look back, my ex-wife used to get upset. First off, for years, I'd pray for children of my own, and then I realized, well, maybe I'm supposed to, me being a teacher, a coach, that's what I'm supposed to, what the Lord wants me to do. But kids, 18 to 22-year-old young men would call me 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, midnight, 1 o'clock, and she didn't want me to answer the phone, but I mean, if they're, to me, they were my children, they weren't calling just to talk, so I would answer the phone and try to be a mentor. Two things, we all have this key. We have a key every day, and we all have a key. There are those 27 years at UTEP, I thought, and I may say this to all of you, we can all keep serving. We can all keep serving. I thought after 27 years at UTEP, when the new head coach came in, some things changed. I thought that I couldn't be a brother or father figure anymore for college athletes. I thought, you know, I was a little bit lost in my heart. I was a little bit lost. I didn't think I could still serve, but thank goodness I was able to be at Ruidoso Middle School for 8 months and now at Capitan, and still try to serve and mentor. And two things I'm going to bring up, and I hope you take this the right way. I don't know if I can tell the story. Anyway, my last day at Ruidoso Middle, there's a young man named, and I'll say his name, Christian Rankin, and lives with one grandmother, and he lives with a grandfather for close of situations that his parents are unable to take care of him. and really a talented, smart guy, talented kid, but just, you know, kind of wild. And, you know, I tried to be a friend, be a mentor to him. And he walked out to my car after the last, I finished the school at Capitan, had the last track meet, and he walked out to the car with me. And I can't say, I'll start crying, but he said something to me that made me realize that we can all make a difference in people's lives. And so that, what Christian said to me, and he said, "Coach, did you know that you didn't realize how much we loved you?" And I was just trying to help be a mentor to those seventh and eighth graders that some of them, gosh, they need help. And so I encourage you all to try to, if you get a chance to mentor anybody, please do. This morning, I got a text from a former player named Johnny Lee Higgins, one of the happiest souls I've ever known, and one of the most talented people. Johnny Lee got drafted in the third round by the Oakland Raiders back in 2006 and played as a receiver, punt returner in the NFL for 5 years. And he came, when I left UTEP, they had a little celebration where I spoke. And he flew in from Houston, but he was on crutches. And told me he went to go dunk a ball in a recreation league game, and his leg just snapped. Well, he came back 3 weeks, 3 months later. I had a Christmas party in July, and that may sound crazy, but that's kind of what I do. So I had a Christmas party in my backyard in July, and Johnny Lee came back. Said, called me and said, "I'm out front, but I need to see you before I come in." And I went out front, and the leg that was broken was now amputated. And I said, "Well, it turns out Johnny Lee has bone cancer." And to save his life, they had to take he ran faster than anyone I've ever seen, me personally, I've ever seen. Could jump, he could high jump 6'9", he could do anything, and he had his leg amputated. And at the end of the Christmas party, I walked out with a couple other people, walked out on his crutches to his vehicle he was going in, and I said, "Man, I don't know what to say." He said, "Coach, I have faith in the Lord. I'm going to be okay. I have faith in the Lord." And he sent me a text this morning, said, you know, he calls me Postman. "Postman, thanks for always helping that little boy that came to UTEP years ago and being a mentor." So I encourage you. I know you all have people like that. And sometimes you may not give yourself credit, but just keep on keeping on like that. And I was going to say this, if there were younger people, there really aren't many younger people here. So I was going to say younger people recognize older people need loving too. Always remember that. But I just know, so I could tell you all, if you get a chance to mentor or get young people to church, I think it just, first, you know, get to know them and get them to church. Gosh, this world needs it more than ever, I think. It needs it more than ever. And good Christian people like you can do that. I don't know how we get it done, but I'm going to try to start bringing some here myself. Because one of my former roommates in my house in El Paso was a wide receiver at University of Alabama for the Crimson Tide, and just a short black man that was just always so happy. And his mother was just like my mother. She was Antonio's mother was a second grade teacher, and she'd come out and stay with us before. And Antonio's saying in life was, "All God's children need loving." He was from Tallahassee, Florida, old southern guy, and he called me up. We talked a couple times a year. He always says, "All God's children need loving, Poss Man." Well, okay. In closing, with his last part here, we all have the key, understanding being a mentor, a father, a mother, a friend, what the key is. Proverbs 3:5-6. "Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding." And then Proverbs 22:6. "Train a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not turn from it." So, Daddy, you and Mom, I'll give you a lot of credit for that one. And some of the other, so many other people that helped me. But there's the end about the key, you know. There was a man, there was a preacher, and he had a son who, after he graduated from college, went out and got a job and at a business, and he became like the operations manager. And for every, he had all kinds of keys. For every, he had a key to every office, every room in this big building that he helped operate. It made him feel so very, very important that he had this massive amount of keys. And it gave him self-worth, more self-worth. But at some point, his dad came and asked him to come back and work at the church. And one thing that he really didn't want to give up, this power of being the guy with all the keys, because when he came back, his dad just gave him one key and said, "This is the only key that you will need." So he starts working there, and all he'd ever seen his dad do was put the key into the main door of the church and go in. So time would go on, and he'd want to go in to the prayer chapel to pray, or he'd want to go in the sanctuary and do something. He would always find the maintenance man, the church secretary, someone that had the big stack of the keys to let him in to the kitchen. Wherever he needed to go, he would ask the key, because he thought he had the key to the main building. One night, he was in there late, and everybody else was gone. He wanted to go into the sanctuary, but he couldn't get into it. And he went around and said, "If I go through the prayer chapel, maybe I can get in. Maybe that's open." That was locked. Every door that would lead into the sanctuary was locked. And finally, he pulled out the one key that his dad said, "This is the only key you'll need." And he tried it into the sanctuary, and it opened. And then after he went in and prayed in the sanctuary, he went back to the prayer chapel. He went to that. He went back to the Sunday school classes. That one key opened everything. And he went back to his dad, and he said, "I told you this is the only key you will need." And he said, "Just like Jesus Christ, that's the key." So in closing, and thank you so much for letting me talk on Father's Day. No matter our age, we all have a key. We all have a key to life and to help others. Try to use that key in whatever way you can, because we all need help. I need help. I know that. We all need help, and bring ourselves closer to God, to Jesus Christ, and the Holy Spirit. Thank you so much.
Jesus. that kid